Hey, baby, stand by for zoo radio transmit.
Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the official At U2 podcast, talking all things U2, including new album news, tour dates, community discussions from the staff of At U2. And I am joined once again by, I guess I can say as always so far, by Mr. Matt McGee.
You haven't kicked me off yet, which is good. So far, so good.
I thought I was the one who was going to get fired here, but I guess...
No, I'm waiting for you to kick me out.
This guy won't leave. And also joined by a couple other guests this time. So welcome to the show, Tim.
Hi, how you doing?
I am doing well. And also to Sula.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And maybe for the folks who are listening and for some reason have never visited atu2.com or something like that, Tim, what's your role with atu2.com, the site?
Oh, okay. Well, hey, I get to write some cool stuff. I take every opportunity I can just to chime in with some news articles and some content analysis. I really love the live performance angle and trying to figure out that. Got an article coming out real soon here on how U2 uses Psalms in the current tour. And there's some really amazing stuff that comes out in their show that a lot of people may not notice. So playing with that one a little bit right now.
And you've also been known to do a few periscoping events.
I have.
From time to time. I know I've caught you.
Yeah, you know, we've got this little after-concert chat that we've been doing. We call it the Crystal Ballroom, and that's been going almost the whole length of the tour and developed quite a little community around that. So if anybody's listening from the Crystal Ballroom, here's a shout-out to you.
What's the hashtag that you guys use for tracking that or...
Yeah, if you're on Twitter, you can kind of look at the hashtag U2CB. U2CB will get you there. Or you can follow me at Tim Neufeld on Twitter.
Perfect. And how about you, Tasula?
I have been with the staff for about half of At U2's existence. I'm actually contributing since 2003, but a full-time staff member since 2005. So I write a lot of things. I help with the Twitter account, and I manage the calendar.
Nice. And we still haven't figured out what Matt does, but I'm sure he does something.
I am in charge of being in charge.
Firing
and,
people.
And two things that I'll just add. Number one, Tim also has been a huge help on this tour, especially with a lot of the videos that we're posting to YouTube, with shooting them at the concerts and then editing them and uploading them and all that. So Tim sold himself short on that. And Tasula failed to mention that her very first assignment for At U2, because I love to tell this story. Tasula's very first formal assignment for At U2 involved crawling through the bushes outside BC Place Stadium in Vancouver or the arena or whatever it was in order to spy on U2's tour rehearsals there in 2005. That is an incredible claim to fame.
It is absolutely true, unfortunately. Yeah. And they have footage, security footage to prove it.
Yes.
Now we just do all that on Periscope and, you know,
the world
we get
watches.
Busted that way.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, before we learn any more details we don't necessarily want to reveal for the show, let's move on to our first segment. Matt, you want to call this the inbox? Is that
what I like inbox. Okay. I think because it's, you know, people sending us questions and we, you know, we have the spreadsheet going. And so I like inbox.
Yeah. Without getting too, what's the word? Pedantic? I can't.
Pedantic.
That's the word. Thank you. It's not technically an inbox. It's just a Google sheet, but I'll let you get away with it for this.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So listeners of the podcast, readers of the site, you can submit questions for the show by using the hashtag AskAtU2 on Twitter. And presumably other social media services, but that's the one we're actually checking. So we might not see it on the other ones. But anyways, to start with, we have at Tim Jahar, if that's how you say it. Is there anywhere to leave comments for specific episodes of the podcast? I definitely have thoughts on seating. So I thought there's a couple different ways we can do this. Certainly you can reply on Twitter to one of us if you want to just argue with someone specifically about something they say on the show. But over on each of the show notes, say goodstuff.fm/atu2/4 in this case, there'll be a link to discuss this episode. Over Good Stuff, we use a subreddit of Reddit. And all the stuff you've heard about the site is true. It's a bad site, but we just are a nice little safe little subreddit. You can go there, leave comments, and we'll check that and follow up and commune there. Is there comments on at you too on the posts that they can use as well, Matt? Or
no, I don't think so. There's when we post in the bits and bytes section on the homepage, there's no way to leave comments there. People could, if they wanted to, they could use the forum. They can start a thread in the forum on to discuss the stuff we're talking about here on the podcast. I think that'd be
That'd be good too.
Or on the Facebook page, we post the show link.
Yeah,
on
exactly.
The Facebook page. Yeah.
See, I'm the new guy. I'm still catching up on all these other fancy places. So any of those places will, I think as listeners, you guys will probably drive where the conversation happens post podcast. So, and we'll kind of just follow you wherever you want to lead, but there's a few options for you, whatever you're familiar with and comfortable with using. Next question was from at dperry905. Why does some days are better than others get no attention in U2 circles? One of Adam's coolest bass lines and edge jangle at its best. And Matt, let's go with you. What do you think?
I would love to know what dperry905 means by that it gets no attention. Like specifically, like why doesn't it get played in concert, or why do fans not generally talk about it as one of their best songs? I don't know. I guess it kind of depends what is meant by get no attention.
Let's say from a live perspective, certainly it hasn't been played much, right?
If ever.
Yeah, I was trying to think.
I don't think ever.
Yeah.
I'd have to go check tours.atu2.com. Plug.
Shameless plug. Hashtag shameless plug.
Yeah, yeah, I think
it's a great song. I don't know. I think there's a million great U2 songs that you could say how come they don't get any attention.
Yeah.
If we're talking, concerts, performing concerts, I think you could make a fantastic set list out of the U2 songs that don't get played, like even on the Innocence and Experience tour. There's just laundry list. I mean, they have so many fantastic songs. So,
yeah. All right.
I am on the website for tours.atu2.com, and some days are better than others has never been played.
Yeah. That's what
I thought. Wouldn't that we say would be, the case of a lot of Zooropa and certainly pop, and they just seem to be diminished albums as a whole that don't get a lot of play or a lot of conversation, which is entirely too bad.
Yeah, which, not that you need to send us angry emails. It's not that we're saying that those albums are the worst.
Well, I would say pop is worse, but let's not start.
We're saving that for a future. Yeah. We'll have the argument yet. I think we'll devote an episode to each album and just have it out that way.
Oh, that's a cool idea. I like
that. That's a really cool idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so save your emails and angry comments and defense or attacks for albums for those episodes. We'll let you know when they're coming up. If they ever stop touring, that's probably when we'll fit those in. At the Crave case asked, did Eden make all the U2 IE tour shirts? I know city specific ones aren't, but my black generic one is. How about the others? Tasula?
So far, I think we only have evidence of just the one being an Eden shirt, actually. And there are different brands on different styles, especially the local, like Boston and New York versions. Those were different. For sure. So Matt, you had one that was an Eden one. What was the design on that?
The one that I bought in Vancouver is the black t-shirt, and it's got the photo of the band on the front, all four band members. And then on the back, I think it just has the yellow U2 IE logo. And that one is made, by Eden.
But they're standing in that picture, right? They're not in bed.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. Bed one, not Eden. I can confirm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. So, yeah. At RVH95 had a couple questions. So, assuming the tour continues through 2016, 2017, would you expect same style scheduling, few cities, multiple nights due to the size of the set? Matt, how about you on this one?
That's a great question. I think they'll need to play in different cities for starters. So obviously they're going to go to New York again, and obviously they're going to go to Chicago again, Los Angeles. But I wouldn't expect like Vancouver to get shows again. I think Seattle would. Phoenix might not get shows, but maybe Las Vegas would or something like that. And then I don't know. I don't think we're going to see. My guess is that it'll be it'll be pairs again, or maybe even one-offs in some cities. I don't think we're going to see a tour itinerary like we just saw in North America, where it's only, what was it, 10 or 11 different cities, you know, spread out over, you know, 2.5 months. So I think next year it will be somewhat different. That's just a guess.
They've really gone after the residency idea on this leg of the tour, you know, being resident in a city. I think, you know, they've done that several places when they were starting the tour in Vancouver, and they've, you know, certainly ending up in New York with 8. And yeah, that'd be a shock if they would go at that angle again. I would imagine they'll hopefully travel through, you know, the southern United States and maybe hit some of the southern continents too, which would be great.
Do you think as a band, just never mind like economics and everything else, but do you think as a band they prefer the sticking around one city and sort of doing that, or just like the, you know, new city every couple of days aspect?
Well, I think they've got to be, you know, feeling the age a little bit here and just glad to settle in to a room for a week. I think that would really be a wonderful opportunity. And then it's been nice to see, you know, families travel with them on this leg too. And I think that's made a little more possible when there are multiple nights in a venue. But, you know, for the sake of the fans, yeah, wouldn't it be great to see them move around a little bit more too, I think.
Yeah. All right. And follow up sort of question, I guess, from at RVH95. Any rumor on how tour could change with the potential release of a Songs of Experience album? Tasula, do you want to theorize?
Well, I haven't heard anything officially or unofficially for that matter, but I would think that perhaps it would include more recent songs, not obviously the new album, but, you know, later songs in their catalog. So maybe the pop people would get their wish, maybe more Zooropa, you know, stuff like that, because we're not hearing anything from No Line on the Horizon currently. We're not hearing, you know, very much of How to Dismantle, et cetera, et cetera. So that could be one angle that they would take if they just keep going chronologically through their career.
The interesting thing to me to think about, I mean, we don't know when it's, you know, when that next album is going to come out. If it comes out before, you know, a 2016 tour starts, you know, that would be one thing. If it, you know, who knows, right? So the timing is obviously part of it. But like the so-called experience part of the current show is the part of the show where they have, you know, had the freedom to change things up more, right? They've flipped the second set quite a bit. Back and forth. They have the segment out on the E stage where, you know, the songs tend to change, you know, every couple nights, et cetera, et cetera. And so I just wonder if, I don't have an answer to this, but I just wonder if, you know, when Songs of Experience comes out, does that mean the experience set becomes the one that is more fixed? Whereas, you know, on the current tour, it was the Innocence, the first set that was you know, much more fixed in terms of what songs they play. So I don't know, it's just something to think about.
I'm waiting for still this Wild Guitar album from Edge, and I think this is the one to do it on. I really think that they need some more Bullet, and they need All Because of You, and, you know, that kind of set of songs that could really rip into, you know, some rock and roll riffs that are, you know, this is not a pun here, but are edgy. And, you know, the first set. The first set of the tour, though, is meant to be kind of deeply introspective and reflective. You know, that's the Innocence Being Lost kind of thing. But if they were to really, I like that, Matt. I like this notion that the second half of the tour could, you know, or the second half of the concert would be maybe more gritty and black and white and, you know, a look at the world. It'd really be interesting to see them do something with that too.
At Spun to You asks, any chance for new shows that could be added during the next month between the U.S. and European leg?
No.
Yeah.
Nope. When was that question asked? Maybe a few weeks ago.
They go to France in August. That's how it goes.
September 4th in Turin.
Yeah, so nothing happening in between. As much as maybe somebody was hoping for some sort of secret concert last minute in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, or wherever, just some random location.
Who was rooting for that?
I don't know. Some guy.
Somebody was, I'm sure.
And of course, they're going to be shooting for the November Paris shows where they're going to be filming this. And
correct. Yeah.
You know, getting out to us, too.
Is that the rumor or just sort of based on past history that they would do that?
Confirmed by HBO, correct? They'll be doing a documentary behind the scenes.
Oh,
and
right, yeah.
I think they're shooting for a live broadcast of November 15. Is that the date?
I believe so.
That'd be the last show of the European leg then.
Yes, correct.
Yep.
Very cool. Yeah, so definitely a break for them right now. So, but definitely not a break for us here on the podcast. We'll keep slugging away. Powering through. What we're going to bring to the next segment of our show, I know, I try my best, what we're calling the AtU2 Roundtable, where we bring staffers, as you've heard, from AtU2 onto the show and pick a topic and get everyone's opinion on it, chat around the virtual, as it were, AtU2 boardroom table. So the big question on a lot of people's mind, I'm sure listeners, fans of the site, is the party that happened, 20th anniversary party that we talked about on the podcast before, but has since happened.
Party? Do we have a party to talk about? Did anything happen?
You guys don't even remember it.
Wow.
Seems like ages ago.
It's funny as we're taping this, it's Wednesday evening, and literally 3 or so hours ago, my son and I were sitting in our living room, and he pointed out to me, "Dad, exactly 1 week ago at this very moment, Edge and Adam were on stage at the AtU2 party." And I was like, gosh. Wow. You are right.
I can't believe
actually
that
did happen.
I can't believe it's been a week. Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah. So I guess I don't know where to begin with the event.
Where do you?
Because the big thing that obviously happened, Edge and Adam showing up. But before that, just for people who weren't among the 400 people or so that attended.
Yeah, we think 350, 400 or so by the time guests got in and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and so was the vibe of the room basically kind of just a bunch of, obviously U2 fans hanging out, having a few drinks and food, chatting, waiting for Unforgettable Fire to go on stage? Is that sort of the lead up to the big surprise?
Well, Unforgettable Fire had been on for a while and we'd done one raffle already, hadn't we?
Yeah, we did. People started filing in around 6:30, 7 o'clock.
Taking pictures. 7, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because we had the social media photo booth kind of set off there. We had African Well Fund had a table. There was video playing, music playing, and food and drink being served. And yeah, I thought the vibe was great. And then. Yeah. At 7:30, I guess, is when I got on stage for the first time and did some, welcome remarks and brought Sherry up, and we did the first round of raffle prizes. That was at 7:30. And then Unforgettable Fire started a little bit after 8 with their segment, with their first set.
Yeah, they'd been on over almost 45 minutes by the time that Edge and Adam arrived.
It was probably closer to a half hour or so. But,
sure.
Either way.
This is the conversation.
Who's counting?
It's not 8:45 p.m.
Well, the only reason I'm aware of the exact timing is because I put that story together on AtU2 with all the tweets, and I was trying to get them all right in order, and so I kind of vaguely remember what time people started tweeting about Dallas arriving and U2 getting there and all that sort of stuff. So yeah.
This is the kind of conversations you don't see that go on when people are editing an article for publication on the show or on the site. Yeah. Yeah. That's actually, I'll put a link in the show notes to you did the sort of social media roundup of folks with Storify and post that to AtU2. So there'll be a link to that in the show notes. Who wants to sort of talk through, I guess, that moment, I guess, when you realized that actually the band is showing up?
Well, I think I'll take this one since I'm the only one that actually saw them before they came down.
She sure likes to say that a lot.
She does, yeah.
Especially since she was only 3 feet behind me.
There was this huge room of, you know, people and everybody that whole night and the next day was like, none of us saw them. And I was like, I totally saw them. I had just gone to the restroom. I almost pulled a Christine Lottie at the Golden Globes, and thank God I didn't. But I just used the restroom after like slamming more drinks than I care to admit and was running back upstairs to my date who was up in our staff area. And I heard the Dallas announcement and I was trying to explain to my date who was not a huge YouTube fan who Dallas was. And so I was telling him like, that's Edge's, you know, guitar guy, that's Dallas. And I pointed down to the stage and then Edge just walks in like right right in front of me. And I'm like, and that's the Edge. And Edge just kind of goes, yep. And just keeps going. He didn't stop. He just kept, you know, plowing past me. And then Adam's right behind him. And I'm like, and that's Adam Clayton. And then I'm starting to like, not breathe or function properly. And the next thing I know, they're on stage. Like it happened that fast. And they just ran down the stairs. And then yeah, the crowd goes wild and you guys can take it from there.
One of my favorite I tried to work this into the OTR that I wrote a few nights ago, but I just couldn't figure out how to fit it in. One of my favorite reactions was from our staffer Karen Lindell. Who was there. And so Tony, the lead singer of Unforgettable Fire, obviously was at the party because, you know, he's performing. And Tony looks a lot like Bono. And then Gabe, who is the lead singer of Acrobat, the tribute band Acrobat, he was also there and he looks like Bono.
In character.
In character. Yeah, exactly. And so Karen, I remember we were talking to Karen after it all happened and she said, oh yeah, I saw Edge and Adam too, but I wasn't sure if it was actually Edge and Adam because there's so many guys here that look like Bono. I thought it might just have been more guys that look like Adam and Edge. Which I just think is so perfect for this gathering of you two nerds.
Yeah.
Like Edge and Adam walk in and you're like, well, it looks like Edge, but it might be like tribute Edge and Adam.
Yeah. People kept saying like, you know, if you look over there by fake Edge, you'll see the silhouette of real Edge. You know, it was ridiculous. It was fun.
Well, I kind of have a funny story about that too, because I was upstairs periscoping when Adam and Edge walked right behind me and we had a bunch of people all over the world that wanted to be at our 20th celebration. And they were begging me, you know, please periscope it, including some of the At YouTube staff who couldn't be there. So we had about 600 people watching online. You know, there's only 400 there, but we've got 400, 500, 600 at different times online watching it. And the conversation was hilarious in the little chat feature on Periscope that comes up, because all of a sudden somebody says, I kind of scream into the microphone, that's the real Edge and the real Adam, but not everybody heard that. And so all of a sudden the chat starts going like this, hey, these guys are pretty good. You know, these guys actually look like, you know, Adam and Edge. Wow, that guy's got the solo down just like Edge, you know? And people are starting to yell like in caps on the chat, it is the real Edge, you know, and Adam. And then other people would say, I just heard the real Edge and Adam are there. Are they really there? You know, and it just was going on and on with the chat feature just blew up on Periscope as people were trying to figure this out. And every once in a while I'd yell into the mic, yes, it's the real Adam and the real Edge. It was hilarious.
Chris was just very going, fun. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Well, and that's the other thing that happened is I handed the Periscope, my iPhone, over to Chris, who now will forever be known as Oh My God Chris, because he just starts yelling, Oh My God, Oh My God, right into the Periscope. And then the camera that Sherry and Steve had set up was right next door to us, right, you know, just a couple feet away too. So that became his claim to fame.
That's the other Chris. That's not this Chris. But that, so that is what you can hear. So I watched the video, obviously, of it, and I can hear some guy, yeah, which is obviously Chris, I guess, saying, "Oh my God, oh my God!"
Right.
Well, and that's the scene that Edge and Adam walked through, which I can't tell you how many people have come up to me and said, "So I heard Edge and Adam walked right behind you." Yep. And then I throw it in, but Tasula saw them.
And Karen, apparently, too.
And that was the joke. That was the joke after the event. Like, here's, you know, here we are, this, you know, this YouTube news website, and our all our editorial news staff is in this room, and Edge and Adam walk right past us, right. And almost no one sees them. What a bunch of great reporters we are.
And then the kind of the ensuing conversations that happened as soon as the party was over. We're all in the back, and everybody's coming to us, you know, kind of by the front door as people are heading out. Oh, thank you for that great party. You guys are so awesome. Thanks for getting them here and all this. And I just have to shrug my shoulders and say, we didn't know. What do you mean you didn't? We didn't even know they were in the building. So, and they just, you know, stare in disbelief. So then Matt and Sherry and a few of us got together after everybody had left to try to figure out what happened. So Matt and I sat down and we did a little Periscope, just trying to piece it together. And we literally, you know, you're right, Matt, here we are. We're supposed to be these news writers and reporters trying to, you know, in the moment, in real time, trying to put it together and figure out how these guys had gotten into the building. In fact, a couple people had tweeted me after Matt, you and I did our little, you know, we were, I think giddy is the word. We were a little giddy upstairs. We were exhausted. We were undernourished. We were probably dehydrated. And
sleep
so
deprived.
A couple
of
people, yeah, sleep deprived. People were tweeting me, are you guys drunk? You know?
Well, some of us were, but you two weren't.
No, I had to reassure them. I was really trying to keep my wits about me. So no, I was just guzzling water because it was so hot in there.
It was. But, it was really hot. That's another thing. Yeah.
So settle this for me. I think you basically have answered this, but you guys or the AtU2 staff had no clue this was happening. This isn't smoke and mirrors where you guys all actually knew, but you just wanted to be some sort of social media, blah, blah, blah.
No.
No one, literally no one knew except for you two and their people. Yeah. We didn't know. Unforgettable Fire didn't know. The venue didn't know. No one knew that this was going to happen. And like, I think I said this in the OTR, like as late as 7:38 on the night, as it was happening, like after our party started, we got an email from the PR folks saying, we're sorry, the band can't make it. 7:38. And an hour later, they were walking into our party. the amount of deception and the fullness of the secret that they, you know, they completely pulled it over on us, and more power to them. And Tim, I loved what you said, and I think you may have said this in that chat we did right afterwards on Periscope, or maybe you said it in email later. I don't know, but I loved the way you phrased it, where you said that we thought we were throwing a party for our 20th anniversary, and yet they stole the show because they came in and threw a little surprise party inside our party for us. And I love the that vision. I think that's exactly what they did.
That's right. Yeah, that's where I'm going with this. This is classic U2. You couldn't get more U2-esque if you planned it. I mean, this is the irony of them misdirecting us in, you know, sending us in one direction, but then coming around the corner with something completely, you know, unobvious. And so, I mean, this is the Daltons. I saw Matt and I were at the concert in the Coliseum in 1987. I was at the top. He was somewhere closer and probably figured it out. But the Daltons were out there, and the Edge was in a dress, and they were playing country music, and nobody was listening to them. And then, you know, they're on the subway with Jimmy Fallon. They just love this stuff. They love to dupe the crowd, I think. And they got us in one of the best cons that I've ever seen them do.
Yeah.
Because
brilliant.
They really, it's impossible for me to throw a surprise birthday party for my wife because she's so intuitive and so smart. But if I can do that, and if you've ever thrown a surprise birthday party, you get as much satisfaction or maybe even more by seeing that surprise be a success than the person who's actually receiving, you know, the birthday party. And that's what I saw on Edge and Adam's face. They were so delighted that they came in and, you know, got us. And I think we heard that from some of the maybe texts and tweets from others in the U2 organization, that they were just delighted that we were surprised. And that's the, you know, giving ends up being better than receiving kind of end of this whole thing. It was just fun.
Yeah,
Yeah, and for the, I'll just throw a reference in for somebody who may not, if you're not enough of a U2 fan or a hardcore fan to know the Dalton Brothers, at U2.com has a fancy webpage devoted to the Daltons, at U2.com/Daltons, where you can go check out what the Daltons, who the Daltons are, if you're not aware.
That page hasn't been updated in probably 20 years, but
I guess it doesn't need to.
Parents, but yeah.
Well, and just for the record, Tim, I was at that 80s, that LA Coliseum show. I was on Edge's side about three quarters of the way up, and I had no idea it was U2.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So well, that's what they wanted.
They pulled it over on me.
And then it was the Bodines and the Pretenders, and then finally U2 came out. Right. We were so happy. Get this country band off the stage. And the stadium was half full at that point, even.
Right, yeah.
That's the kind of awesome stuff you think, I don't know, as a person who, if you ever would become a celebrity, you think you'd have to do that kind of stuff. And it's more common now with social media, you know, hijinks and stuff, but with celebrities, but just to like mess with folks and have a little fun with it. But I'm impressed as a guitar player, knowing how finicky and particular Edge is about stuff, that he was willing to go on stage, play guitar with someone else's gear and stuff that he had never seen before that exact moment, right? Like no sound check, no anything. He's just trusting that their gear is going to be up to his whatever standards, and also the effects and stuff are going to be there close enough that he can play along. So
yeah, that's, I mean, that's, I keep, I mean, I'll admit, I keep watching the videos.
Well, who doesn't?
Over and over again, right? Like, I don't know how many views it has, but you know, a good portion of them are me.
You or M2.
That's right. 8,000 times for Matt.
Guilty as charged. There's just like every time there's like something else stands out, like, wow, that's another reason that they could have said, no, we're not going to do it. Or another reason that they could have just, you know, completely bailed. And you're right. They, it wasn't their instruments and nothing, you know, none of their gear and the whole, and they just walked on stage, and it took Dallas all of, what, guys, 30 seconds to, you know, strum a couple notes on the guitar, chat with Mick, I think, a few times, and and then bingo, and then Edge starts in on Streets, and then George tells him, no, don't start yet. We have our synth loop and all. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. There's so many things every time I watch, I'm just like, wow, this was really the coolest thing they could have possibly done. I can't imagine how it could have gotten any better.
You know, in terms of being a guitar player, right? You're right, Chris, because I play guitar too. And, you know, just to walk on a stage with such an intricate set of patches and, you know, technique and technical support that you're used to, and not have that, and then be able to carry it off and to walk up to the microphone as Edge was doing and singing the backup harmonies. And we're kind of hearing him in the videos, even with kind of that live unfiltered voice coming through. And it was just golden, you know, no earpiece monitors, no stage managers. It was just raw. It was them. And it wasn't out of obligation or duty. They were having fun. They were celebrating with us, and they were just having a great time. One of the things I even noticed today as I was watching that is Dallas is telling, Unforgettable Fire guitar player is
Mick.
Mick, right. Okay. So Mick has to go crouch down beside his amp, and he's doing something manually to bring Edge up for the solo on Out of Control. And Dallas keeps holding him back. All of a sudden, Dallas gives him the cue, and you see Mick do something to his amp, and that's when Edge rips into his solo. And so, you know, the other thing I saw immediately is that Edge has this huge amount of trust in Dallas to run the things behind his back. And Dallas was, you know, he was Edge's manager that night. It was really beautiful to see Dallas get into it. And Dallas at times was just clapping and hooting and having a great time as well. Yeah. So I don't want to forget Dallas in the picture, because he was back there just having a really great time too as well.
Totally. Justin Kent is a friend of ours who's been to a bunch of shows, and so, you know, some of us have seen him at shows. Anyway, so we had Justin shooting photos for us throughout the night at the party, and I just got a chance this morning to look through, you know, several dozen photos that, you know, he's shared with us that we'll eventually get uploaded on our Flickr account, and we'll post that soon. Anyway, the amount of you know there must be 40 photos of, you know, Edge and or Adam, and they are smiling in 35 of them. It just warms my heart to see that they were having that good a time, you know, doing what they did with Unforgettable Fire. Just, I mean, that's my favorite part of the whole night, really, is just the joy on the band's face, the joy on Mick's and George's and Tony's and Craig's face, right? I mean, they were in heaven. And then the joy, you know, the obvious joy in our audiences, you know, their reaction to the whole thing and you know, and how everybody just, I get chills just thinking about how happy everyone was with that moment.
That's one thing I'm actually really looking forward to seeing, because you two also had a videographer in the house, we should mention. Their official documentarian or whatever was on the side of the stage when they crashed it. And I think they're going to have the best footage of the fan reaction. And that's what I'm looking forward, because that's what we couldn't see from standing above everyone facing the band. We couldn't see their faces, you know, and you catch glimpses of them in some of the pictures, but I would like to see the actual reactions.
Yeah, you can. They posted that 3 minute or so video on U2.com, and you can see some of it a little bit there. But I'm with you. I'd love to see. I mean, I hope they'll do something really cool with what they shot there.
Yeah, we got to get Justin's pictures up because he did a good job documenting
his photos as well.
The fan reaction was just...
Yeah, he probably has the best of that, of that so far.
Yeah, and you know, that reminds me, on a related note, one of the things, we were kind of standing upstairs, you know, looking down at the stage and doing a little video stuff or whatever. But one of the things I thought after the event was over is, I forgot to take pictures. I mean, and several of us said that. We literally didn't take pictures because, as Bono's been saying later, we were in the moment. And it really just was a golden moment to be there, to relish it, to see these guys and not worry about pictures, not worry about autographs, not worry about all the paraphernalia and everything. I'd really just have it as a memory, a golden memory kind of lodged in my brain now, which I'm glad for.
And one thing I'm also grateful for is that most of our staff was actually together when it happened. I mean, a lot of us were up on that little, you know, bridge thing. And I thought it was cool to be able to share it with all of you guys, you know, rather than be scattered throughout the crowd and, you know, not be able to hug each other or, you know, high five and all the things that we did that night. So I was actually very grateful it worked out the way it did, even though we weren't very close to them when they were actually playing.
Yeah, that's what's just in terms of follow-up. One other question we had to the Ask at U2 hashtag was from at JabW10. Did you talk to Unforgettable Fire after the party? What did they have to say about the crashers? Could they even speak?
I talked to them. So the party crashing when Edge and Adam showed up, it was during the first set of their performance, and their performance that night was, you know, mimicking, you know, the Innocence and Experience tour. They did a first set, then we had an intermission, then they came out and did a second set. So it all happened during the first set, and then we had our intermission, and I went and talked to them in their you know, preparation area or green room or whatever we're calling it, during the intermission. And I mean, oh my gosh, they could hardly put sentences together. they were just like, you know, OMG, and just hugging me, and I'm like, God, you're so sweaty. I'm joking. But no, it was, they were just completely thrilled and completely, you know, just cloud nine. It was, I think they would have been thrilled if it had just been Dallas. Like, you could see when Dallas walked on stage, they're like, wow, this is so cool. Dallas is here. We're going to play with Dallas. And then when it's Edge and Adam, you know, that's just no disrespect to Dallas, but that's just a whole nother level, right? And so, no, they were, you know, back at intermission, they were just on top of the world. And I think it manifested itself in their second set. I mean, they just, the second set, not that the first set was bad or anything. The first set, they're fantastic. They're a great tribute band. And this, when they came, the second set they did, they were just like, it was just like they owned this room that night. And it was, yeah, there's just the energy in the whole place was up. And they were on top of the world.
And George did actually stop Edge and say, let me count you in, you know, so we don't screw this up or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And you can see that on the video. You see him stopping him, and then they fall into sync, which was really cool.
Yeah.
And props to Tony for staying in character as Bono.
He was great. God,
and
he
I don't know how he stayed that cool, because he stayed in character, and he's leaning back to back with Edge, and he's introducing them. And it was just so fun to watch him. And I was really worried for the second set. I thought, what's Unforgettable going to do now that Adam and Edge just ran out of the building? And they brought it in that second set. In fact, I couldn't believe how long they did, probably an hour and a half in the second set. They just went and went, and they kept the crowd right there. And it was so fun to watch them enjoy the crowd. And if you think about that crowd, if we've got 350 people, we've got 350 of probably the best U2 fans on the planet right there. People coming from all over the world. You know, there's JT, who is from Costa Rica, and we've got our Brazilian crew there, and just on and on.
Australia and New Zealand were there.
Ireland was there, yeah.
Yes.
There,
So I met a guy from Dublin. He stood right in front of me at Madison Square Garden number 8, and he turned around and saw my shirt, and he just went ballistic on me. You know, I can't say right now what he said, because it was just, that was bleeping unbelievable. You know, and he's from Dublin, and he thought that was the coolest thing that he'd ever been to. So you've got these hyper fans who know, I think, Matt, you wrote in your RTR, they know more about the band than the band knows about themselves, probably. Yeah. And half the band shows up. So no wonder the guys were having so much fun, both Adam and Edge and Unforgettable Fire, because this was a crowd that you could probably not reproduce. This was better than the Roxy. You know, this was better than anything.
It was smaller than the Roxy. Yeah.
It was smaller than the Roxy, and it was the fans who had you know, pilgrimaged to New York City, you know, for these final two shows, and then they show up in concert. So way to go, Adam and Edge and U2 organization, for having fun with your most faithful. That was a blast.
Yep. Awesome night.
Yeah, I wonder, the way you're describing that, when as Adam and Edge leave and they go back to, you know, presumably the hotel or wherever they meet up with, you know, Bono and Larry, are they telling Bono and Larry, like, you guys missed out on, and who knows what their schedule was and why, and it's not that we're disparaging that those guys weren't there, but just kind of like the same way, you know, you guys are now telling fans who weren't there, like, man, you missed out on this. Do you think within the organization they're like, man, you guys missed this awesome sort of moments with fans that we got to experience? I don't know.
Well, since Bono mentioned it on stage the next night, I think he regrets it a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe keep that in mind, Bono, if you're listening, for the 25th party for at U2.
Bono and Larry, we want you this time. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, that's a cool little note you just threw in there to Sula, because it was at the concert in the next evening then that Bono said something about the 100th performance in New York, and I don't know about the factual nature of that, but then he kind of backtracks and says, well, 99 and a half. Wasn't that the gist of it? I think, because, and then he mentions, because, you know, Adam and Edge crashed this party as half a U2, and we'll count that as a gig, I guess. Half a gig, anyway.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Is that part on a video somewhere that people can go check out?
Yeah, Sherry actually has been tweeting that one out.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get a link in the show notes to that as well, so folks can check that part out too. So that'll make me definitely want to go to the next party that you guys throw.
Well, yeah, I think that's one of the many first things that we said immediately after was, we're going to have to get a bigger venue for the
exactly. Right. That's what I'm afraid of. Like, next time we say, okay, we're having a party, everybody's gonna be like, I got to go.
expectations have been set.
Will U2 be in town, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll go to Dublin for that party. How about that? We'll go to their front door. Yeah.
The bar has been raised.
Yeah. So what we're going to be doing with this podcast actually is this episode, episode 4, and then the next one as well, we're going to have a set of different U2 staffers on chatting about their experience with the show and stuff and getting a different perspective on the night and things like that. So if you've got questions still that were unanswered or just stuff you want to gush about, just like we have, again, use the hashtag AskAtU2 on Twitter and we'll get those into the show next episode. And be sure to cover some of your questions and things like that as we chat with a few other folks on the podcast. So anything else, Matt, as far as I guess there's a few upcoming events. One big upcoming event actually is Edge's birthday. I just happened to catch here is happening probably before we release this, August 8th. So for whatever that means in your world, if you send him a little card.
He deserves a card for showing up at our party. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, if you'd known, I'm sure you would have had the cake ready.
His birthday party.
He turns 54 this year, so if that makes you feel old or young, I don't know, but it is what it is. Matt, any other closing remarks for this episode?
No, we didn't even get to talk about the New York shows and all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot more we could do and will do, and we'll do more of that. We'll do more of that in the next podcast.
Like I've said, Matt, when, I think before we started, you said, I don't know if we'll have enough to fill every episode, like a weekly show, like sure for a while, but we're going to run out of stuff. And I still don't see the, we're,
it'll be October and we'll be like, you remember the time they came to our party?
Just get the three of us back. You won't have it.
Yeah, just put us in here.
Listeners will be sick of like, okay, we know they came to your party already.
You know, that was our party.
All right. And so, Tim, are you doing any Crystal Ballroom stuff over the break here? Or are you taking a hiatus as well?
Well, no, we've got some special plans. In fact, I just locked it down and tweeted out today that Monday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific time, if you follow me on Periscope, you're going to get to be in a conversation with YouTube brother Mark Baker. He's the Mirrorball man, and he's going to join me. And we're going to talk about his times up on stage and his little shrine he has and how he got into this whole tribute band thing. We'll just have a little fun with that. So that's coming up this coming Monday. We probably need a date on that in case this gets replayed. That will be August 10th, 7 p.m. Pacific time.
And you know what? We'll probably figure out a way somehow. Well, I know there is a way, but we'll figure out a way to get some of that audio in. Again, if we ever have a break where we don't have anything to talk about, we'll repurpose some of that stuff so that folks who just want to happen to listen to some of that stuff, we can throw it in the podcast feed as little extras, bonus B-sides, as it were, I guess, for the nice podcast too or something. If Tim gives us permission anyways, we'll work that out with his lawyer.
Bless you.
So where you can find this show, if you're tuning in and finding it somewhere on the web, is one place is goodstuff.fm/atu2/4 is this episode, and you'll see links to the things we've discussed. Twitter.com/atu2 is the official atu2 Twitter account. And then, of course, like I mentioned, hashtag AskAtU2 is where you can submit questions for the show. Facebook.com/atu2com. Did I get that right this time, Matt?
You
I think
did,
I threw a dot in last time. So Facebook.com.
Well done.
@u2.com. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Tasula, Tim, thank you.
Yes, thank you guys for showing
up. Thanks for having us. That was fun.
We'll have you on again sometime, I'm sure, unless Matt fires me. Until next time.
One of us.
Well, I guarantee somebody will be fired before the next time.
Insert Donald Trump joke here. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.